Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome back to the show Ashley Michiquet. Now, she has been here before, and I'll mention the other show quickly, but I really want you to go back and listen to that. Now, Ashley is the CEO of True North Retirement Advisors, which is an independent financial advisory firm managing $230 million in client assets, and she's located just outside of Portland, Oregon. Gorgeous place. Ashley specializes in designing, building, and implementing custom design exit plans to help her business owner clients secure their final and most important business decision, the exit from their business. A lot of us don't think about that. We build it, and then we're like, now what? That last podcast we did will help you with that information. So Ashley is on a mission to help 300 small business owners transition successfully into retirement in the next 10 years. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, Ashley returns to share a ton of information, creative ways solopreneurs can save enough for retirement, tax-efficient retirement plans and how they work, why business owners should consider HSAs as part of their retirement plans, the biggest mistakes people make with their HSAs, and the super secret that no one knows how to save six figures in retirement. I think we touched on that briefly before, and how to get a tax deduction for it. So again, be sure to listen to our previous interview, Get Unstuck, Three Universal Steps to Exit Your Business. Ashley, good morning. I'm so excited to have you back.
Good morning, Denise. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And just so anybody knows, if they hear hollering in the background, that is hashtag Hamilton is an ass. He's a very large 17-pound cat, and he's in my office. He's not leaving. So you may hear him hollering. You know, he doesn't have an indoor voice, just so you know. So let's get started, because you have so much to share. You know, and I went back and I listened to our last podcast, which I think was in June, May or June. It was a few months ago. And the information that you shared during that was just phenomenal, and I have, you know, absolutely no doubt that you'll do this again. So let's get started. So tell people a bit about yourself very quickly, and then we'll go into the creative way solopreneurs can save enough for retirement. That's a biggie.
Yes. So I actually got my start in being an advisor back in 2007, so right before the financial crisis and the Great Recession. And it was a difficult couple of years coming out of that and working with clients and watching their retirement savings dwindle pretty rapidly in a very short period of time. And I was actually telling someone yesterday that there were days where I just wanted to crawl under my desk and die because it was so difficult. But it taught me so much, because that happened right at the beginning of my career. And now on the other side of it, I'm so thankful that I went through it, because it totally shaped how I advise clients and how we invest. And, you know, we don't put everything under a rock, but, you know, we have to protect against the potential downs that are going to happen. And I started working with my first 401k plan right in the midst of the Great Recession. We were still kind of bottoming out, and I had this plan. It was a brand new plan. I went out to meet with the employees for the very first time, and they were all very scared and uncertain, and a lot of them had stopped saving because they weren't sure of, you know, what was going to happen to their money. They didn't want to keep putting it into a black hole. And that for me was a career-changing experience, because I realized how much so many people out there need help and guidance, and they don't get it, because, you know, it's not profitable for most people to serve somebody with a $5,000 IRA or 401k balance. But I could do that through working with 401k plans. So it was a lot of fun to go out and just meet with people one-on-one, meet them where they are, and help them make progress towards retirement. And so I've been, that led to a pivot where I started focusing on retirement plans. And then over the years, working with small businesses through the 401k plans, I realized that I also wasn't having enough conversations to get them to the other side, to the exit from their business. So it sort of morphed over the years into, I still do retirement plans, but it's very much interconnected with the exit plan, which of course you mentioned we talked about last time. So it's a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of people out there who need help and guidance, and even things as simple as, you know, should I be saving? Should I be paying off my student loans? I still have $100,000 of student loan debt. You know, what should I be doing? Should I be saving for retirement and paying off student loans? Should I just focus on that? So there's a lot of people out there who have a lot of questions about what they should be doing, and I really, really enjoy just meeting with them one-on-one and helping them make progress.
You know what I am loving hearing, and I think we've talked about this before briefly, that, you know, you were wanting to crawl under your desk and just pull the drawer over your head so nobody could see you. But then you went from that to gratitude because it helped you pivot and it helped you find a apparently woefully underserved market. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty brilliant. Yeah. A lot of people just go, oh, geez, I don't know what to do, and they panic, and I know you panicked. We all did and do. But you took a lot from that and said, yeah, there's ways for me to help other people and still make a very good living. So good for you.
Yeah, yeah. So, Denise, should we talk about, like, the bare minimum thing that business owners should do if they want to save for retirement?
Mm-hmm. Wherever you want to go, listen, I just want to hear whatever you've got to say because I think you're brilliant. So just do whatever you want to do here. I do have some notes, but we can use them or not use them. So let's just go wherever the conversation goes.
Well, I really wanted to emphasize the health savings account and HSAs because I think they are a very underutilized tool for both individuals and business owners, but particularly business owners. And if we're talking about solo entrepreneurs, it's something, you know, they need health insurance, they need health savings accounts. But the one thing that people don't realize about health savings accounts is that they can actually be used for retirement savings vehicles. You don't have to use the money in your HSA that year. You can invest it and let it grow so that in 20, 30 years when you're retired, or maybe even 10 years, you know, whenever you're retired, you can then, you have this pool of money that you can draw from to pay for healthcare expenses in retirement, which if you ask anyone who's retired whether they're covered by Medicare or not, healthcare is expensive in retirement. So the HSA is, it's really the, like the Cadillac option for saving for retirement because no plan out there matches it. It actually has three tax benefits. So you have tax deductible contributions that when you put money into the plan, so that you get a tax deduction for money that you put into the plan. Then from there, it grows tax free. And then if you take the money out to pay for what's called qualified medical expenses, those withdrawals from that health savings account are also tax free. No other retirement plan can match that. They might have one or two where you get tax deduction and tax free growth, but then when you take the money out, you're taxed. The HSA is the one plan that has like the triple whammy of tax-free, tax deduction going in, tax-free growth, and tax-free withdrawals. And so that's what really I want to emphasize is that it doesn't have to be used this year. You can let that grow, and it'll grow tax-free, and you'll have this bigger pot of money than you otherwise would have had you used your HSA money every year.
Do you have any examples you can share of, you know, people who did exactly what you're counseling here and how it helped them?
Yes, actually, I've utilized a health savings account for years. I have several clients who, as they get closer to retirement, they start putting money in this, because, you know, every year you might have one year where you have a lot of, you know, hospital stay and you have big medical expenses, but then in other years you don't really have much. So I've had clients where consistently they've contributed to these over the years. And actually, if you, in 2019 for a family, you can contribute up to $7,000 into your HSA. And so then it grows, and then I have a client who recently has used that and started taking money out for it, but that pot of money that she had was bigger than the contributions that she made because she allowed it to grow for her. So it can't be overlooked, and it's important to realize that you can use this for the future, not just for your medical expenses today. So that's where I would start, is with the HSA. Yeah. Not everyone can do it because you have to have a certain type of health plan to qualify for it. You have to have like the high deductible plan. But it's, if you are able to do an HSA, it's the holy grail of retirement plans because it offers all three of those tax benefit features.
I don't know much about it, just other than what you've told me today and in the past, but why is it overlooked? It seems like it's pretty smart.
I think there's a couple of reasons. A lot of people confuse it with, I believe it's the flexible savings account, where you have to spend it every year, like use it or lose it. And they're so similar in their abbreviations that a lot of people just think they're one and the same. So I think, the problem is people think that they have to use all the money in their HSA every year and that it won't grow. And then also they don't maximize the contributions, and so they might put maybe a few hundred dollars a year in, but then they're going to use that for the expenses that they have throughout the year. But if you really take full advantage of it, a lot of times, you know, you're not going to be draining that money, and so the money in your HSA, at least a portion of it, can be set aside for growth and for the future. And I think that's
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I think the combination of the use it or lose it misnomer, and then the people not realizing that that money can grow for them and they don't have to just park it in cash, are the two mistakes that I see people making the most with the HSA plans.
Now, this is going to sound remarkably silly because I don't know anything about this other than what you've shared with me, but it says it's a health savings plan. But my question would be, what if you've parked a whole bunch of money in there and you really don't need it for health, but you need it for a down payment on a new house or something? How does that work? I mean, can you use it for anything other than health?
You'd be penalized if you took the money and didn't use it. Yeah. So I believe for the average retiree today that those expenses in retirement are like in the $300,000 range for lifetime out-of-pocket expenses over the retirement years. And it's pretty staggering when you look at that, especially now that's throwing in people who end up with dementia or Alzheimer's. If you know anybody who's had that or whose parents have that, it can be very burdensome. And a lot of times they're forced to spend down their assets because it's just eating into their assets so much to pay for that kind of care. So an HSA is just a way to pay for the inevitable health care expenses that you have in your life, and then also later on in retirement. And I haven't had a situation where someone has used their HSA for, you know, other things, or had too much money in their HSA. I've never seen that.
That was going to be my next question. In a way, what happens if, you know, you've parked this pile of money and you really didn't need it, and then you pass away? Where does that money go?
Is
it
really
part
question.
Of your estate? Does it? Can you leave it directly to somebody? What happens? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I have no intentions of having any kind of I'm just going to die in my sleep at 100 years old plotting world domination. I'm not going to be ill. Just I'm putting that out there. But it, you have to wonder, where does this money go? I mean, you've put it there. Now what?
Yeah, you know, I've never had that problem. I would imagine because it's like a family, it will pass to your, if you're married, it would pass to your spouse.
I would think.
But
you know,
yeah,
I don't trust them, so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I think what happens is that ends up just that money that's left in there, like if it passes to your kids, I think it's just becomes taxable to them, and they can take the money and have it. It doesn't just disappear into nowhere or go to the government or something, but you sort of lose those tax benefits if you don't use the money in your lifetime, is my understanding.
That would make sense, but man, it's a shame that we have to be taxed coming and going. And that's a big, it just makes my eyebrows raise, and not in a good way. So you mentioned that the biggest mistakes people make with their HSAs, I think you referenced one. Are there a couple or three?
Yeah, it's that not knowing, thinking you have to use it every year, and then not understanding the tax-free growth and being more short-term oriented. That's probably the main thing. And just not realizing either that you can contribute that much to it. $7,000 if you're a family, or $3,500 as an individual in 2019. So you can,
wow.
And if you're 55 or older, I think you can do another $1,000. So you can get a lot of money in an HSA every year and consistently contribute to that. And the next sort of leg up for saving for retirement would be Roth IRAs or traditional IRAs. But I think people just, they totally skip over the health savings account, because a lot of my clients do not have one. And they don't realize that it doesn't necessarily have to be connected to your employer, because, you know, most of these health plans are connected through work. But you could set up, like I have retiree clients who set them up independently. There are outfits. I actually don't administer health savings plans for clients. They have to go and set up those accounts elsewhere. But there are a lot of outfits out there that, where you can set up a health savings account, make contributions to it, invest the money, let it grow, and it's there for you when you need it.
So basically, you're advising people to look into these vehicles?
Yes, absolutely. It's those tax benefits are just too juicy to ignore.
Yeah. I'm getting that idea. So we've talked about HSAs, which I find fascinating. I will be looking into that. Even though I'm going to die at 100 in my sleep plotting world domination, I can't say that enough. But so what are some of the creative ways that, you know, let me back up a bit. There's a lot of different ways we create our business, corporations, solopreneurs, which is different from an entrepreneur. Some of us are, you know, we're just one person in a business, solopreneur. We may be a mom and pop shop. There's just so many ways we create our businesses. So what are some of the creative ways that solopreneurs in particular, because I am one, that's why I'm interested, how can we save enough for retirement?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the beautiful benefits of being a solopreneur, business owner, whether you have employees or not, is that the options regarding how you can save for retirement are just wide open. Whereas if you're an employee and you work for a big company, you're going to be much more limited in what you can do. So I think the place to start, obviously, depending on how much you can save, would be the Roth IRA or traditional IRA. Now, I don't want to spend too much time there, because most people have heard of these. Most people have Roth IRAs or traditional IRAs, but they're great if you're just starting out and you don't intend to save more than the maximum for the year's limit, and your taxes or your income isn't too high that would lock you out of saving for like a Roth. So if you're only able to save a few thousand dollars a year, then the Roth or the traditional IRA is a great way to go because you don't have the added complexity that you have if you were to implement a 401k or a profit sharing plan. So in 2019, you can contribute up to $6,000 into a traditional or a Roth. And then if you're over 50, you can do another $1,000 on top of that. So if you don't intend to save more than $6,000 or $7,000 and you qualify for the IRA or the Roth based on your income, then I would say that's a great way to go because of, you don't have the complexity. You don't have to submit contributions on behalf of any employees that you might have. But you're really limited in how much you can save there, and there's no matching or any other benefits. So that's kind of like the starter plan. If you just want something simple, easy, that doesn't have a lot of restrictions or requirements, but you don't anticipate saving more than the $6,000 or $7,000 limit, that's a great place to start. The next step up would be SEP or simple IRAs, which those allow higher contribution limits, and then you can do matching dollars. So here's where you can start to get tax deductions for your business when you make contributions, because any contributions that go in for a SEP IRA or matching contributions for a simple IRA are tax deductible for the business. So here's where we start to get into the benefits from a business perspective. And then, of course, where you have these contribution limits that are much higher, like for a simple IRA, it's more than double what you could put into just a traditional or a Roth IRA.
Now, is this something that most business owners would know, or do we really, and I already know the answer to this, do we really, really, really need to speak with an accountant or CPA or a tax attorney? I mean, where do we go?
Yeah, I think a CPA is a good place to start, or their financial advisor. Most advisors are familiar with the SEP and the simple and the Roth and the traditional IRA. It's when you graduate up to the 401k that you're going to want to work with someone who more specializes in this. There's a statistic I read a couple of years ago. It was only like 2% of all financial advisors manage more than 10 401k plans. And so most advisors, they just dabble in it, and then you can get into trouble because they don't know. A lot of advisors don't realize that if you are a solo entrepreneur, you can do a 401k, and it's not going to be a lot of major headaches to do that. It's actually really simple to administer, but it's not really on most advisors' radar. If you have a good CPA, it's probably on their radar because they're looking at it from the tax savings perspective, which is really, really, compelling. So, the 401k is kind of the next step up. And if you are a solopreneur, you can open what's called a solo 401k, but you can't have any employees. So it's a great way to go. And if you do end up having employees later on, you can just have a regular 401k plan. But obviously, they're much easier to administer, and the rules are a lot less restrictive if you don't have employees and you just have the solo 401k. So that's a great place to start. And the beauty of the 401k is you can contribute up to $19,000 from your own income. And then if you're over 50, you can do another $6,000 on top of that. So you can get to $25,000 that you set aside from your own income. You can also do a Roth 401k, which there's no income restrictions on that, which is really compelling. And then in addition to that, you can put in matching contributions. On top of that, you can set up a profit sharing plan. So you can get between all of those, you can get like $62,000 inside of a 401k and a profit sharing plan this year if you were to maximize both of them.
Wow. Okay, a quick question, and I think I know the answer to this one. When you say that solopreneur 401ks can't have employees, a lot of solopreneurs have what we call contract. I mean, I have a heck of a team. They're all contract. They do not fall in that category, right? They're not employees.
Right, and they'll look the IRS will look at it depending on a couple of things. If they work less than 1,000 hours, then you don't have usually typically you're not going to have to cover them as employees.
1,000 hours annually? Of course. I mean, monthly that would be difficult for anybody but me, because I don't sleep. But okay, well that makes sense. So when you say you might have to cover them, that means you would actually have to treat them as an employee, even though they're not being paid as an employee. I'm not sure I follow.
Well, there are certain restraints. Like, they can't be, if you're going to have a solo 401k, you can't have what's called common law employees. And I'm trying to remember the exact definition of that. I think basically, like, the contractors don't apply because you don't really have control over, like, when they show up for work every day. They're technically contractors. I would look in, if you are thinking about doing this and you have a contract employees, I would just look into it when you're setting up the plan, and you'll have a what's called a third party administrator who writes the document for you and then helps you do the admin for the plan every year, so you're not doing this on your own. But they will help you figure out how you define who an employee is and who isn't. And for most people, unless you have basically people who are employees, but you're calling them contractors and they're still showing up for work every day and they're working full time, it shouldn't really be much of an issue to qualify for the solo 401k if you don't have any technical, like, W-2 employees.
Okay, and that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure I'm writing notes because I'm going to have some questions for my CPA, obviously, when we're done here. So, what is there anything else that we need to know about that particular vehicle or that particular plan before I move on to another question I have?
Yes. So the one last thing is, I think a lot of people assume that because the 401ks have a little bit more restrictions and they fall under it's called the ERISA plan rules, they think that it's just going to be big headaches. But actually, what's interesting about the solo 401k is that you don't have to do the annual tax filing form. That's required for 401k plans until the assets reach $250,000. So you can have a plan in place for quite a long time and have a pretty simple annual administration where your TPA is doing third party administrator, the person who's helping you with stay in compliance every year, where they're doing either pretty basic or no tax filings for you at all, until those assets get up to a certain threshold. So it's very simple and easy to set up a solo 401k, in particular, because the government has actually made it a lot easier, and you don't have these roadblocks where you have to file this tax form every year and you have to pay thousands of dollars to have someone administer your plan. No, it's because it's pretty simple and it's just you. It's very cost effective and it's a lot less headaches to establish and run a solo 401k. And then you get those incredible tax benefits. You have the ability to save a tremendous amount of money every year, if you're able to do that and get a tax deduction for it.
Are you finding that more and more people are finding out that this is something that they can do and moving gladly towards this? Or are the CPAs or whoever it is that they have advising them really not quite up to speed? I mean, you probably see a lot of things that you're like, how did you not know about this?
Yeah, it happens a lot when I work with there's one solo business owner in particular where for years they had a SEP IRA and they weren't really maximizing it even though they could. And so I think it just takes a lot of it if you're going to have a 401k or any type of retirement plan, you have to be committed to saving in it, because you can get to your 50s, 60s and be like, wow, I missed this huge opportunity. I had the income, I had the means to save more, but I didn't do it. And I think one of the biggest temptations for a lot of business owners that I work with is that they just take all the extra money that they have and when they have good years, and they just plow it right back into the business and help their business grow, which I totally get. But for a solopreneur, it's very challenging to try to sell that business or get anything from that business when you're ready to retire. So we have to have this plan, this retirement plan over on the side, so that when you are ready to start working, you have enough assets to be able to retire comfortably. And that's what the solo 401k and these other plan types allow you to do, is to be concentrating on saving every year, which is, you know, consistency and maximizing what's in front of you is probably the biggest challenge that I see.
Well, and I think you said something very important, is that many businesses, feast or famine. It's not an even road. I mean, we're going to go, oh, this is great, and then, oh, crap. I mean, that's just the way we operate. That's the way the universe operates. So for people who are in that ebb and flow all the time, what should they be doing? What should they be looking at? Because some days, some years, it's going to be very difficult to fund anything. In other years, you're like, oh, what do I do with all this extra money? So what's the best way for them to look at this?
Well, you know, it's always, it's important to start where you are. So if you're not saving anything right now, or you're saving, you know what you're saving is nowhere near where it needs to be. I always challenge people to look at their income as a, or look at what they're saving for retirement, always as a percentage, not a dollar amount. Because if you target saving a percentage of your income, you'll still save the same percentage in good years and in bad years.
Whereas, oh, kind of like tithing.
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
10% or something like that. Okay.
It's exactly the same, and it's the same thing, same advice that I would give someone actually who wanted to be more generous in giving to charity and tithing, is that, you know, if you're trying to get to 10%, it's going to hurt a lot if you go from 2% to 10%. But if you go from 2% to 3%, you're probably not going to feel it very much. And if you can target getting to 10% over time, then every year, you know, let's say you increase it a percent or two each year until you get to where you're saving 10% of your income, you're going to, because you're gradually adjusting your lifestyle and your income, and that money is also coming out of your paycheck up front versus at the end of the month. So there are a couple things that you can do in terms of how you structure your contributions. Naturally, with a 401k plan, it's just going to come straight out of your paycheck before it hits your bank account. So it's a lot easier to save versus just every month writing a check or doing a manual transfer to whatever savings vehicle you're doing. So yeah, it's just, it's really just start where you are, and even if you feel like you're behind, and it's, I find a lot of people get discouraged. They're like, I should have been saving in my 30s and 40s and I didn't, and here I am, and they're so discouraged that they don't even start. And I come across that all the time with the employees and the 401k plans that I work with. And so, but I'm like, you know, can you do $10 a month? Yeah, I can do $10 a month. Okay. So we just start with wherever they feel that they can start. And then what ends up happening is, as they see that asset, their assets in their retirement grow, they're even more motivated to do more, and they see that it's working. Like, wow, I have something. Now, I may not have $1 million in my 401k, but I have something, and it's going to continue to grow and be a cushion for me, even if I can't rely on it solely for income in retirement. So just start where you are. That would be my advice.
I like that. Okay, so quick question. Somebody just shot me a note. What if you don't have a paycheck? As a solopreneur, a lot of us simply don't have that set up. We pay the bills, we pay our team, we pay everything, and then if there's something left over, we just keep it. So what do you tell people like that? Because, listen, when I first started, that's what I did. and I'm telling the audience, don't do that. Don't do that. So how do you get people to go, okay, I need to be an adult. I need to treat my business as a business. So what would their steps be to make them, you know, get a paycheck and then take some of that money to their 401k? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, you know, I agree with that process and how that, you know, if you're taking just these K-1 distributions whenever you have money and maybe some months you take a lot and then you might go 3 months without taking anything out of your business. So when the income and the paycheck is inconsistent, it's really hard to be consistent with what you're saving. And so I would suggest that at the bare minimum, if you can take a draw of you know, whatever that minimum amount is on a monthly basis, just so you can establish some consistent income if you have the ability to do that, even if it's very, very low. And then from that, it's easier to save on a monthly basis. But you could actually, like if you have, you get to the end of the year, and I have clients who do this, they get to the end of the year, they're not sure throughout the year, like you said, feast or famine, what's going to happen. But they get to December, and they're like, okay, I have some money. I can make a contribution. You know, you can make a one-time, write a check one time for any of these, for the 401k, for a simple SEP IRA, for a regular Roth or traditional IRA. So if you have this inconsistent, the problem is that if it's not an automatic thing, it's just really hard to remember to do it. It's a lot more likely that it's going to fall by the wayside and you won't save anything. But, you know, if you put that reminder in your calendar every month or every quarter to kind of assess where you are and try to set some money aside for in your retirement plan, I think, you know, that's really all you can do.
And this is not just moving it into your personal savings account either.
Right, because that doesn't pay, you know, that pays pennies on the dollar for interest. Yeah,
really
so, and with technology now, it's so easy to set up, even if the money goes into your bank account first, it's so easy to set up automatic contributions to retirement accounts, either from your paycheck or from your bank account. So,
That's good to know.
Usually,
so that does make it easy if you haven't, you know, set up the whole, I'm going to cut myself a real life check here. It's a business check. You know, if we're not doing that, we can just take it from our bank account, which I love because sometimes it's so much easier to just hit your bank account and send it on.
Right. I had a client just a couple weeks ago that called up she has monthly contributions going into her account, and she said, I gotta stop. I have these. She just had these medical bills, and huge surprise medical bills. And she's like, you know what? I gotta stop what I'm doing for like the next 3 months, just so I can pay off these medical bills. And so, no problem. We're just gonna stop her contributions for the next 3 months, and then we're gonna call her and say, hey, are you ready to start, you know, contributing again? So once you have it set up, it's very easy to increase, decrease, suspend temporarily, stop altogether. I mean, with technology now, especially in the banking and finance world, it's very easy to just, with a phone call or a couple of clicks, to pause those regular contributions if you absolutely have to and you can't contribute. So I always challenge people to go stretch yourself a little bit, go beyond, and as far as saving, you know, of course start where you are, but try to do a little bit more than what you think you can afford to do, because you can always dial it back. You know, you go a couple month or two and see how that goes, and then, but for most people, they're going to find like, oh, wow, I didn't even, especially if it's coming out of your paycheck automatically before it hits your bank account and you have all these other bills that you pay. If you pay yourself first, which people hear all the time, pay yourself first, which means put it in your savings account, put it in your retirement plan first, but stretch yourself just a little bit. And most people find that if they pay themselves first, that they don't miss the money that much because it wasn't there for them to spend.
Well, and, you know, when I used to have a regular paycheck, and trust me, I've worked for other people rarely, I just don't have the temperament for that, but I would look.
You and me both, Denise.
I don't. I'm telling you, I run with scissors, and I don't play well with others. And if you want coffee, get it your own damn self. I'm not going to do it. But seriously, you don't want me in your office. But I would look at all of these things that were being taken out of my paycheck and go, what in the world? But then after a while, I wouldn't even miss it anymore because it became, it just was like, well, I don't have it to spend. I won't spend it. So,
right.
Yeah, I get that attitude. You know, it hurts the first couple of times you look at it, but then you realize you're probably reining in some of your kind of silly spending anyway. I would think that it would have the added benefit of going, did you really need that? Can you return that? You don't buy that thing. So I would think it would have, a couple of benefits if you do it this way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So tax-efficient retirement plans and how they work, have we covered that, or is that a separate thing?
Yeah, that's pretty much the 401k and then the match and the profit-sharing plan.
Mm-hmm.
If you combine those three, you can save a lot, up to $62,000 a year. But then on top of that, you get a pretty darn good tax deduction for the business as well.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say that the one plan that you can add on to that, so you've started your 401k, you're maxing that out, you've added the match, and you're doing as much as you can through the match, which is the employer money, so your business, you have your own personal money, and then you have whatever the business is contributing to, that's the match, and then you have profit sharing plan, which you stack on top of that, and the combination of those three get you to that $62,000. But what most people have no idea exists is that if you are a very profitable business, you make a lot of money, you pay a lot of money in taxes, and you're pretty consistently profitable. So this is usually consultants, it can be attorneys, CPAs, a lot of service-based firm, a lot of doctors or dentists, most of whom aren't solopreneurs, but they're small business owners. If you have a highly profitable business, you have the ability to save more than that $62,000 a year. A lot of people just stop there. But you can actually stack on what's called a cash balance plan on top of that, and you can save, depending on your age, you could save up to like $300,000 for retirement and get a tax deduction for your business as well with that cash balance plan. So you kind of just stack these plans on top of each other. It's tremendous, like six-figure tax deductions, incredible amount of money that's going into your retirement savings a year, especially if you've been behind and it's like, whoa, I'm like 10 years from retirement. I do have the means to contribute, and I want to save $200,000 to $300,000 a year, get a tax deduction for it. Guess what? You can actually do that. So it's the granddaddy. I call it the granddaddy stack.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you can do to save on taxes, catch up on retirement savings if you're behind, if your business is successful, profitable, and you have the means to save more. You absolutely can save more than that $62,000 cap.
Wow. So is this a super secret that no one knows about?
It is, because most CPAs that I talk to, who are, in my opinion, the primary person who is accessible to their client, because they're talking to the clients of CPAs, they don't like paying taxes. Nobody likes paying taxes, and they're in a perfect position to be able to suggest to their clients that they implement a cash balance plan. But I talk to CPAs all the time, and none of them know about cash balance plans and how it works. And my husband's a CPA, and until I told him about this, he was like, oh, that's really interesting. So there's a big gap in understanding that these exist and who they're appropriate for. And I think a lot of CPAs, and especially financial advisors like myself, aren't aware that these exist. And so it's not even on their radar when they're talking with their clients about saving on taxes and saving more for retirement.
See, I don't understand why they don't know about this. I mean, this is such a huge deal. Why wouldn't they be digging deep and finding any possible way to help their clients? Or maybe they're just too busy yet. What's the reasoning behind this, that it's a big secret? Do you know?
I think so. Cash balance funds have actually been around since the 1980s. And I think it was like Pepsi or some large corporation like Pepsi was like the first one to adopt a cash balance plan. But they work for large businesses, but they actually especially work well for small businesses. And but it wasn't until 2006 where the tax law was a bit more clear on the guidance as far as who could have these plans, what it was. So for many, many years, cash balance plans were this weird animal that the IRS couldn't really figure out how they wanted to deal with it. And so they did not clarify the rules around this and the tax benefits and all of the little nuances with the cash balance plan until basically 13 years ago. And I think a lot of the CPAs and advisors who are experienced and have been around for a long time, their association with the cash balance plan is that it's this weird animal that isn't as good as it sounds. But in 2006, they clarified all these things and made it very very clear, like, here's who can do it, here are the restrictions, here's what you need to know about it, here's, you know, all the rules around it were crystal clear at that point. And so I just think too many people just don't realize that major change shifted in 2006. But if you look at a chart of the number of cash balance plans in existence prior to 2006 and then after 2006, they've absolutely exploded in popularity since then because those rules were clarified. So I think more and more businesses, as more CPAs and financial advisors familiarize themselves with it, because I could pick out and about, I could talk to a business owner in about 3 minutes and figure out if a cash balance plan is something they should pursue or not. And more advisors, just as they are able to do that and bring this up to their clients and talk to their clients about it and sort of know who's a good fit, because certainly not everyone is a good fit for a cash balance plan. You really have to be consistently profitable to make it work. But as more and more advisors understand these plans and it's on their radar and they recommend them to their client, I think they're only going to continue to grow from here.
My brain is buzzing. I'm not ignoring you. My brain is literally on fire. While you were talking, it hurts. I was actually thinking of a very good client. She's a good friend and she's a good client. And I'm not going to say who she is on the radio, but I do want to introduce you to, because I think you two have some very similar interests in clients. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that particular client led me to wonder all these different things that you're talking about. How do you handle all of this through divorce? I mean, divorce is, what, 50% or more? I mean, how do these things hold up if, you know, your spouse or your significant other is going, oh, I have. I mean, what are the rules there? What do you do?
Yeah, it's pretty individualized. Like, most divorce decrees are going to spell out what happens to those assets. I had a client, husband and wife client, who had been married for many, many years, who recently got divorced, and they, luckily it was an amicable divorce, and so they were able to kind of pick and choose. So not everything needs to get split, you know, halfway down the middle. Your cash balance plan, your business assets, your 401k, your house, like not everything has to be liquidated and split 50-50. They were very wise in that. They decided, they sort of picked and choose who was going to get what, so that certain assets for one of the spouses remained intact. You know, the other spouse who maybe doesn't care about having the house, you know, that's part of the other spouse's. So It depends. You know, a lot of times assets just sort of get split down the middle. But you bring up a really good point, Denise, because there's this new trend now. It's called gray divorce. And
what is it called? Gray divorce?
Gray divorce, like gray hair. So divorce rates are
I was thinking it was like, I don't care. Take what you want. It's just a gray area. I don't care.
No, like gray divorce is because there's this really strong trend. Like divorce rates among people in their 50s, 60s, 70s who are like close to retirement is skyrocketing. And financially, it's devastating. I mean, there's no getting around it. If you've worked your whole life, you've saved, and you plan for retirement with the idea that your assets for you and your spouse are going to remain intact. But then, you know, if 5 or 10 years prior to you getting divorced, those assets are basically cut in half, and now you have to figure out how you're going to still retire with the lifestyle that you envisioned when you two were together as a couple. So I know divorce is it's got a lot of moving parts, but the financial aspect of divorce can't be underestimated because it is very devastating for most couples. I mean, you're not really going to escape from a divorce financially, especially when you're close to retirement. If you're in your 20s and 30s and you've got all this extra time, then it's a lot of times, especially with your retirement, it's not as challenging to sort of recover from that. But when you get divorced at 60 or 65 and you've done all this planning up to that point with the intention that those assets that you have as a couple are going to remain intact, it's a very difficult wake-up call.
No kidding. I had no idea that people, I see people in their 50s and maybe 60s getting divorced, and I often wonder how they made it as far as they did, but 70s? Really? I mean, aren't you kind of, aren't you kind of entrenched in, it's like, well, I don't like you very much, but, you know, I'll stick around, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Google it, Denise. It's so prevalent. It has its own term now.
So. Oh God, that's insane. Okay, this is completely off topic, but it just stuck into my head because a lot of us as solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, we have business partnerships. Are there any vehicles that we can use to save from the business that are, you know, would work with business partnerships? For instance, my business partner, if anything happens to me, every part of the business that we've built together transfers to her. That's just all there is to it. It doesn't go in to anywhere. It goes to her, lock, stock, and barrel. Are there any vehicles that we can use to start saving and build up cash?
Yeah, in fact, all those same vehicles that we talked about apply when it's a partnership as well. And especially a lot of partnerships will also set up their own LLC. They'll have like separate LLCs. And so a lot of times you can set up the retirement plan under that same LLC and have like a solo 401k. Like it's very possible that you could have two business or three business partners and each of you could maintain your own separate solo 401ks. I've seen that.
Well, that's good to know. I will be calling her as soon as we're done. So I say, okay, I've got a plan. We need to talk.
I think that a good rule.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I keep interrupting you.
Oh, no. A good rule of thumb with the 401k is that when you have a partner, if they're another owner, then the restrictions are a lot less. It's when you start adding employees, and if they work over a certain number of hours, if they're not contract employees, but if you know you have W-2 employees, that's where the rules sort of kick in, and it's like, okay, you can't discriminate against this person. You can't set up a 401k and just have it be for you as the owner. You have to provide this benefit for your employees too and make contributions on their behalf, make it available to them, all those kinds of things. But the IRS doesn't really care if one owner is going to participate and another owner doesn't want to have a 401k plan. It's only when you start getting employees do they say, okay, you got to make this available for your rank rank and file people as well. You can't just have it as a benefit strictly for you as the owner. And so I think if you can kind of remember that rule of thumb, you have a lot more flexibility when you're solo. If you don't have employees, if you have other business partners, those are all situations where you really can tailor something that's going to work best for you. And you have a lot of options to kind of figure out what works best for you.
And see, that is great advice, because so many of us, we just find our business partners, I swear, in the ether. They just show up and you're like, oh, this is a great idea. Now what? So this is tremendous advice, and thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure. I love sharing this, especially when you get into the more nuance of the 401ks and what you can do, because I think that's where people get a little bit intimidated by the rules and restrictions, and they just throw up their hands and say, I don't want to bother. But it's potentially
right.
a mistake, because you're leaving a lot on the table in terms of what you can save for retirement, the tax benefits that you get for doing so. So I'm just excited to share, you know, what I've learned from working with clients over the years and helping them. So I appreciate it, Denise.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. You have no idea. Listen, before we go, is there anything else that you wanted to say? We've got about 3 minutes left. So if there's anything else you wanted to add, and then I'll get you to tell us where people can find you.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is that, you know, we talked about this, but just start where you are. Don't feel like because you didn't start saving when you were 22 years old that you're behind. And to just investigate these different plan options for solopreneurs. You know, I don't care if people work with me or anybody else, but find somebody who knows what they're doing, who has experience working with whether it's 401ks or simples, so that they can properly advise you. And, you know, be willing to, a lot of people are penny wise and pound foolish, and so they're reluctant to go talk to their CPA because they know the clock is ticking when they do. But there's such a tremendous resource, your financial advisor, your CPA, tremendous, tremendous resources in that they can, their job is the expert analysis to point you in the right direction to help you find the structure of retirement plans is going to be ideal for you and a good fit for you and your situation and what you can save. And so that's sort of the key takeaway is you don't need to try to figure this out on your own. There are experts out there who can help you, and utilize those experts because their expertise and knowledge is, you know, tremendously helpful, especially when you're running your business. No one, you know, wants to get in the weeds of the 401k plan administration when they have bigger fish to fry.
No kidding. I wanted to ask you this, too. If I just lost my train of thought. I looked out the window and went, squirrel. I seriously did. The squirrel just ran across my window. I kid you not. Gosh, what was it? And it was important, too. Well, now I just went brain dead. Okay, so where can... Oh, I know what it was. I had a brilliant idea, lost it, brought it back. So, Ashley, do you have a spot on your website or maybe your newsletter where you have like a checklist of things that people need to be asking their CPA or their, you know, their financial advisor? Or do if you don't, I will create one out of this content that you've given
me
today, because we need a checklist, I'm telling you.
Yes. I don't, you know, there's some really great resources out there. One of which, if you Google retirement plan comparison or retirement plan comparison chart, it will lay all these plans out side by side. So you can see for like a simple IRA compared to a, yeah, and those are for free and they're abundantly available online. And those are a great starting point. I would say, though, they use a lot of jargon in them, but they'll give you a sense of, you know, what you can contribute. You know, but when you start getting into vesting schedules and discrimination testing and that kind of stuff, or whether or not loans are available, then you kind of start to get like, I don't know which plan is right for me. But it's a good starting point for just investigating these different plans. And typically when I meet with someone for the first time, I have a pretty standard list of questions that I will ask them, although I haven't really thought about it from their perspective what they should be asking, because it's really up to the advisor that they're working with, whether it's a financial advisor or their CPA, to ask the right questions that lead them down a specific path. They just come to me and say, "Ashley, I want to save more. I don't know how to do that." I say, "Okay, we'll figure that out." And so it's the job of the advisor to, you know, narrow these down, and a good advisor will be able to very quickly, after just a few questions, figure out what plan type is going to work best for that particular person.
I'm willing to bet, though, that somewhere you've got a document or a series of documents that kind of lay out the questions you see and hear the most. Checklist, I'm telling you, you need a checklist.
I know, I love it, Denise. The problem is right now it's all up in my head. I could get it out on paper if I thought about it for long enough. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the same questions that come up over and over again, and it's so important to, you know, give people the resources to ask good questions of their advisors.
Right.
It's super important.
And see, as a web developer and a marketer, I'm already rebuilding your website so you can have an FAQ page. And I know I didn't build your website, but it's something for you to think about. Listen, Ashley,
yeah.
Where can people find you on the web?
Yeah, so if you go to truenorthra.com, that's if you go to our homepage, there's a button there where you can schedule a call. This call is scheduled with me, and if someone has a question about, you know, what plan is right for me, I really want to be doing more, I don't know what I should be doing, that's a perfect reason to hop on a call and have a conversation about it. So it's free, the call is with me, and I'd love to talk to any of your listeners who have some questions and they want to get answered. I can point them in the right direction.
Excellent. Ashley, thank you so much. It's been a joy and a pleasure speaking with you again. And I genuinely thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience. I'm making phone calls as soon as this is, because I was, seriously, I wrote down 1, 2, 3, 4 people that I want, yeah, I'm going to say, listen to this. Now, stop what you're doing. Go listen to this. And I do want to introduce you to a couple of my clients for various reasons, not because they need your services. I think that you have complementary type of possibly referral businesses. I don't know, but I'll share them with you, and you can make that decision if you want to meet them. But anyway, thank you so much. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and really anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Ashley, thank you.
Thank you so much, Denise. It was so much fun to be back, and I really appreciate all you're doing for your audience and everyone out there to promote them and their business and what they're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.